Welcome, everybody, to the College Football Show on the Grilly Truth Sports Network. The College Football Show is brought to you by Manscaped. Make sure you check them out at manscaped.com, promo code TGT20 for 20% off your first purchase and free shipping. I'm your host for the College Football Show, Mike Goodpasser. Right now, I'd like to welcome in my co-host, straight out of Clemson, which is not in the game this year, Sam. Sam Teets, how you doing, Sam?
I'm doing all right. Just had to remind me, though, that Clemson got the doors blown off by Ohio State last week, which is pretty disappointing.
Yeah, which leads us to this game, which I think there's no doubt these are the two best teams in college football. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. At this point, after watching what Ohio State did to Clemson, what Alabama did to Notre Dame, I mean, those semifinal games weren't even interesting by halftime.
No. They were terrible, which makes you doubt more whether Clemson and Notre Dame belong there more than Ohio State and Alabama. And I still think of Ohio State, they shouldn't have played in the Big Ten championship game, but I never said that they shouldn't be allowed in the college Final Four. I just think that the rules should have been changed for them, because the rules are always changed for programs like Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson. But I do believe they're one of the top four teams. Let's start off with our keys to the game. I think the biggest key to me for Ohio State is Trey Sermon, Sam. He has to be effective against the Alabama defense. And just by looking statistically, I mean, Alabama's defense ranks lower than Clemson did against the run.
Well, and frankly, if we're putting this all in perspective, Ohio State's defense, Clemson's defense, Alabama's defense, they're all worse this year than they have been the past two or three seasons. They're just not performing as well. So there is an opportunity here for Trey Sermon to have another big game. He's had a with Derek say had a strong run the past couple of games. He's been on fire at the end of the season. He's had four consecutive 100-yard games. Of course, he had that monster outing versus Northwestern. He is probably the most important player for this Ohio State offense, maybe even more so than Justin Fields.
Yeah, because over the last three games, Sermon has 70 carries, 636 yards, 36 first downs. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And on the surface, the rankings are about the same, Alabama and Clemson against the rush. A deeper look at the stats shows you that Alabama gives up more yards per rush than Clemson. In fact, Alabama actually gives up a little bit more per rush than Ohio State does. This, I think, means a huge opportunity for Ohio State with Trey Sermon running the ball.
Well, yeah, and he's been dynamic. This is a guy who's playing for draft position. He's playing for much more than just the national title here. But he's played Michigan State, hit 112 yards, Northwestern 331, and then Clemson last week 193. And that's not a good Clemson defensive front, but it's a solid defensive front in terms of where it ranks nationally. So being able to do that against Clemson, it makes me very optimistic they can do the same thing or something similar against Alabama.
Now, when I look at the passing game for Ohio State, I think for all the talk surrounding Patrick Surtain at quarterback or cornerback, I think the one flaw in his game is a tendency to lose a receiver as he runs routes down the field. I mean, this small flaw, I think, can work to the benefit of Ohio State, as Garrett Wilson might be the better matchup with his speed against Surtain, which would leave Chris Olave to run around and cause havoc for Alabama. So I really think if you combine a solid running game by Sermon, I think you'll get a really good game by Fields, because Surtain is a guy who I does think have some weaknesses.
Wait, even if Chris Olave matches up against Surtain too, he was the one who beat Clemson deep last game. I think he beat Darion Kendrick, I'm pretty sure, to get over the top for a huge bomb in the second half. This guy has speed as well. He's got 500-yard games this season. Only one where he didn't have 100 yards was against Rutgers. And his biggest performance against Michigan State, Clemson, I think Olave is a borderline first-round pick in the NFL draft. Some teams might view him that way. I think it's more likely he's going to turn to a second-round pick whenever he gets there. But he's a very talented player who can stretch the field. And I think Justin Fields, based on what we saw, is going to feel very comfortable trying to test.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you got to worry about is this. If Trey Sermon starts to run the ball really good and Alabama starts playing that safety down to stop Sermon, I think Justin Fields will definitely find plays over the top to Wilson or Olave. And I think this game is headed to being a shootout, and I think it's going to be a great matchup.
Well, I'm hoping it is, because like I said, we didn't have very much out of the divisional round. I mean, out of the semifinal game. So I'm thinking about the NFL already, but we didn't get much from the semifinal game. So I'm hoping that this turns into a quality matchup, so we at least get something out of these college football playoffs.
All right, Sean Wade says he wants Devonta Smith. Devonta Smith, Heisman Trophy winner, is a wide receiver, and I think he overmatches Wade. And personally, I think this, all things being equal, the difference in the game to me is going to be whether Sean Wade can handle Devonta Smith or not. And I don't think he can.
Sean Wade does not want Devonta Smith the way he does. I mean, Devonta Smith is so good right now. He's been unstoppable. And frankly, Sean Wade's game has slipped off very much this season. He's struggled this year. While he's seen his draft stock fall from a top 20 prospect to a guy who's now looking at maybe being a top 60 guy. He's had a serious drop-off here, and he hasn't played that well, including against Clemson, didn't have a fantastic game against the Tigers. So I don't know what Sean Wade – I know Sean Wade's confident, obviously, in himself, but realistically, he's not going to match up well. Even if Jalen Waddle plays in this game, I don't think he would match up well against Jalen Waddle on a bad ankle.
Yeah, and I think much like the Clemson game, I think the key to the Clemson game for Ohio State was the defense and the way they disguised their coverages. And I think the confusion for Clemson was evident during the game. It caused problems for Trevor Lawrence, and I think it could cause major problems for Mac Jones as well, which could limit the big plays and help Ohio State really have a shot to win this game.
Yeah, because Mac Jones is not impeccable. Mac Jones will make mistakes here. It's the issue that he has so many good weapons around him, including a strong offensive line in front of him, that he'll have time to make decisions, he'll have time to make plays. And of course, when you have players as talented as Devonta Smith, and we don't know if Jalen Waddle's going to play or not, just be a feint by Alabama to try to get Ohio State curious or maybe concerned about having to face him. But even without Waddle, there's so many good weapons on Alabama's offense. I don't view how Ohio State can possibly match up against all of them.
Well, how about this, though? I think the way they can match up here is Alabama is going to be playing a backup center in Chris Owens. And the interior defensive line for Ohio State should feast up the middle. Haskell, Garrett, Tommy Togiai, or whatever the hell his name is. And that is if both are available, because, of course, you never know with the COVID. But I think that would cause problems for Mac Jones. Jones is less of a mobile quarterback than Trevor Lawrence. And while he does well to take a hit and make a throw, his ability to escape is not what Lawrence's is. This matchup, to me, could be the biggest key of the game, no matter who is playing for the Buckeyes. Alabama has a great offense, but getting to Jones would have a huge impact on OSU's ability to win this game. I think this game is decided on whether the interior line of Alabama can block the interior defensive front of Ohio State.
Well, Haskell Garrett is a very good player and a very, very intriguing draft prospect who's brought this year and gets him early on, maybe the three rounds. I think this is very much a similar situation what we saw last night. If you watched the NFL and you watched the Washington-Tampa Bay game, where the best thing Washington could have done was put pressure up the middle and force Tom Brady to try to move around. If you do that to Mac Jones, because he's not a mobile quarterback, he's not going to run, he doesn't even have the same level of mobility as the Justin Fields, put pressure up the middle and it automatically throws everything off, and maybe hope you can push him outside a little bit and get your linebackers or edge rushers a shot at bringing Mac Jones down.
All right, the other question is coaching. Ryan Day, his one loss was to Dabo Sweeney. He outcoached Sweeney in this last game completely, and he's going to go up against Nick Saban now. But the one thing about Ryan Day, it seems that this dude is an outstanding coach, and the Buckeyes aren't perfect. So he's going to have answers to adjust to what Alabama does. I think he can. I think this game is a complete toss-up. I think from the coaching aspect, it is too. I think Ryan Day is really underrated.
Well, maybe that's why some NFL teams were giving him attention this offseason, looking at him potentially. But, of course, he denied all interviews staying with Ohio State, as far as we know. He has risen up pretty quickly here. He did get a lot of credit for kind of taking the program that Urban Meyer had built up. But at this point, being able to beat Clemson the way they did last week, I mean, like you said, he completely outcoached Coach Sweeney and everyone on Clemson's coaching staff, completely just outperformed them. And that's why Ohio State blew them out. So Ryan Day does deserve a lot of credit for what he's done so far. And it's him versus Nick Saban. That's about just as good of a coaching matchup as you can ask for in the national championship game.
Yeah, and I think catastrophic mistakes are huge here, especially for Alabama, because I think that Alabama is slightly better than Ohio State. I think what Ohio State needs to really throw this game into the air to give them a chance to win is to force a catastrophic mistake. Just one from Alabama can switch this game, because I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. So both teams need to take care of the ball. But Alabama, if they were to make a big mistake, I mean, let's face it, the first 10 minutes of this game are huge, because if Alabama comes out and after 10 minutes the game's tied or they're behind, game changes immediately. If Alabama gets up quickly a touchdown or two, and we don't know Justin Fields' injury, how it's going to affect him, the first 10 minutes of this game, I think, are huge.
Yeah, with Justin Fields, I think you have to be somewhat optimistic because of how he played in the second half versus Clemson. But at the same time, maybe that gets worse. Maybe the injury gets worse over the span of a week. Maybe you feel it more going into this game. I'm looking at Alabama's team, and it's hard to figure out where that catastrophic mistake will come from. Because Mac Jones only has 4 interceptions this year. Najee Harris doesn't fumble the ball a lot. So I think a catastrophic mistake for Alabama will have to come, not necessarily from them making a bad play, but from Ohio State's defense just making a good play. Ohio State has to create something here because Alabama's going to gift wrap them something.
Well, how about this, though? When I watched the defense from Ohio State against Clemson, Trevor Lawrence was a guy that didn't make many mistakes either. And they forced him to make mistakes. And the way they played their defense, the way they disguise their coverage is something I don't think Mac Jones has seen.
That's fair. I mean, Mac Jones hasn't necessarily played the toughest schedule this year. I think the closest game they had might have been Florida, but Florida has a pedestrian defense at best. I think it was the biggest flaw of that entire team. So you can make the argument that Alabama hasn't played a defense or a team that's coached as what Ohio State has right now.
Yeah, and I think you look at it with Alabama. Alabama's not a team. Offensively, they're very explosive. So you're probably not going to get 3 or 4 three and outs right in a row. That's why I think turnovers are so huge. And the Buckeyes did force almost 3 turnovers a game. And I think that was a key against Clemson. The Tigers had 2 turnovers. They still scored 24 points with the 2 turnovers. So thankfully, if you're an Alabama fan, they're not a team that turns the ball over very much. The Tide average less than a turnover a game. They have to have multiple turnovers in this game, I think, to lose this game. Najee Harris only has 1 fumble. As you said, and that's for his career. Mac Jones has only thrown 4 interceptions this season. But I think it's also safe to say you're playing in a game that is much bigger than a normal game and a game conducive for people to maybe do things they wouldn't normally do.
That's true. I mean, the pressure of the big stage is going to get to some people. But you won't have as many fans there as you ordinarily do, so maybe that lessens it a little bit. Maybe you get a little more settled down because you're not going to have necessarily the sounds or the pressures you would have otherwise from the environment around you. Maybe that plays a role. But like you said, it's the pressure of the national championship game. There are guys like Mac Jones has never played or never been a starter in a national championship game, so maybe that rattles him a little bit to start the game. Maybe if Ohio State comes a sack in the opening drive, maybe that throws him off for the rest of the night. There's always potential for stuff like that to happen. But I would just bet against that because of how well they played this season.
Well, I can tell you this. I don't think a crowd affects a game like this. I mean, you're not going to hear it. You don't know that there's not a crowd there when you're playing this game. And if you do, you're probably going to lose the game anyways.
Right, because you have to be so locked in and focused, right? That just kind of blurs everything else out. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, once a game starts, I mean, the crowd is – if you're the home team, maybe the crowd gives you a little bit of a boost time to time. But overall, I just don't see where the crowd – if the crowd affects you, you were going to lose anyways, put it that way.
No, I understand that because that's probably – that's something that's should be considered exterior, I guess, when you're on the field. And probably not the biggest thing you have to deal with, especially with Alabama or Ohio State. You need to be focused on that and going through your reads and progressions versus – the sound of the crowd around you.
All right, let's look at some of the draft questions from guys that in this. Is Justin Fields now in the conversation to be the number one pick?
No, let's stop this. Like, I don't think for Trevor Lawrence, I understand there are question marks. And I've admitted this to you the entire time, that there are question marks about Trevor Lawrence. But you don't go from being a guy who's considered a generational prospect to falling below Justin Fields because of one game. So I think Justin Fields is going to be a top 10 pick. He's maybe a top 5 pick based on how quarterbacks are valued in the NFL. But this does not mean he's going to be QB1. I certainly think I've had Zach Wilson ahead of him still. I still have Zach Wilson ahead of him as well. I have Justin Fields QB3 right now. And I think that's about where he deserves to be, despite having that great game against Clemson.
All right, so what if he does the same thing with bad ribs against Alabama, wins a national championship, and says goes 25 for 30 for 350 yards and 4 touchdowns, leaves a game-winning national championship drive? Do things change then?
I think he's QB2. I think you probably have to make him QB2 at that point. I understand that it's just 2 games, so I understand
So you would put him ahead of Trevor Lawrence then?
I have Trevor Lawrence QB1. I have Zach Wilson QB2. I would move ahead of Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson is the best quarterback in this draft.
Yes, yes, Mike. We know. We know this is how you view things.
Wait, this is the thing. How I view things with quarterbacks is usually correct, right? When I gave you crap about ranking Josh Allen and Ryan Tannehill so low the first half of this season, where did you rank them by the end of the season?
Pretty high up.
Okay. Now, I'm telling you this. Last week, what we saw from Trevor Lawrence was the issue. I do not think that he adjusts well on the run to coverages to change during the game. I think that Wilson has a huge edge over both of these guys from that. I think he'll turn over the ball less in the NFL. And I think Jacksonville's a scary proposition for anybody to go to, especially if Urban Meyer's the coach, because they've got a lot of holes they've got to fill. You don't know if Urban Meyer can coach in the NFL or not. So, you know, I know Todd McShay moved Wilson over Fields. Do you think that Wilson stays? So you believe Fields may possibly go number two, or do you think the Jets are going to stay pat, or will the Jets trade out of that pick?
I mean, if I'm the Jets, unless I really believe in Sewell, I think Sewell is going to be like a star tackle. I want to put my bookend tackles there, get Mekhi Becton and Sewell there. Unless I believe that he is going to be like a lock-in starter right away, I would probably trade out of that spot. So I believe Sam Darnold has just as much value as a Justin Fields. And Greg Rucker is actually in the comments asking if Justin Fields would go to the Patriots. I don't know if he would fall that far, because the Patriots are on the middle of the draft, like 15, 14, somewhere in that range. So I don't know if Fields will be available at that spot.
All right. I will say this. I don't see how Justin Fields fits what the New England Patriots want to do on offense, unless they change what they want to do for Fields. I mean, I really think Zach Wilson would be the perfect pick there in that New England offense. I don't know. And go Browns, Greg. Mac Jones. What is Mac Jones' ceiling in this draft? Middle first round, second round, third round?
You know, it's crazy because I wouldn't take Mac Jones in the first round. I'm just looking for something a little bit more, I don't know, dynamic, Mac Jones to me is very questionable. I've asked people who have done or worked for draft sites what they think about him, and they say he could go towards the bottom of the top 20. That's probably his ceiling. He could go somewhere in the picks 17 through 20 at the highest. And I think he'll probably fall to the second round. He'll maybe be a middle to high round pick. But they're saying he has the ceiling to be a first-round guy and to sneak into that top 20.
All right. I saw one today that actually had New England taking him at 15. With Mac Jones, the question here is same thing with, what's your take on the questions about Ohio State quarterbacks? Is it a legit concern with Justin Fields to look back at the past of Ohio State quarterbacks? And would it be fair to do that with Mac Jones also?
Yeah, it's difficult to answer that because I think that, you know, you should try to evaluate every prospect within the bubble. But at the same time, it's the same, similar coaching staff, similar schemes sometimes that carry over. Not a lot changes. So maybe you're going to have guys who will break the mold. There's always the players like that. And you bet against those guys because of what's happened in the past. You risk missing out on a player who could be really good. However, it's happened so much at Ohio State with the quarterbacks. It's very hard to overlook that. I do believe there's something to buy into when you're looking at positions like LSU with defensive ends. They don't always work out in the NFL. LSU has some trouble producing NFL caliber defensive ends in the past. I think that Ohio State and Alabama, obviously the quarterback spots have happened. So I think that's a problem.
Well, I think there definitely is a problem there. And I think the problem is the style of offense that the teams play. I mean, remember, this is a school that let Joe Burrow go and go to LSU. I mean, if they have Joe Burrow last year and they're actually letting him play, they probably run away with a national championship. Let's go to Devonta Smith. Does he have a legitimate chance to go in the top five of the draft?
Yes, because there's going to be teams. I think Miami's up there, and they're going to need him, or they're going to need somebody like that who's going to be able to stretch the outside, play alongside Devontae Parker, and give Tua Tagovailoa another receiving option. So I would still side with Ja'Marr Chase. I really would. I think Ja'Marr Chase to me is wide receiver one, and Smith could be either wide receiver two or wide receiver three, depending on what you're looking for. I have Chase number one because Chase honestly might have had a better season last year than Smith had this year, even though Smith won the Heisman. So I don't think it's that big of a gap between those two players in terms of their production. I would still side with Ja'Marr Chase, who I believe has the better prototypical build for him, maybe the concerns with the weight, versus only about 175 pounds, like being 6'1". So I think I would just side with Chase there. and take Chase potentially as a top five pick and Smith somewhere in the top 10.
But does it change your mind if you're the Miami Dolphins and you've got Smith there who knows Tua? Because this is something where you could have Smith go number three to the Dolphins and reunite with Tua, and you could have Chase go number five to the Bengals and reunite with Burrow. I mean, how big of a factor does it take or does play into it that Tua and Smith have spent a lot of time throwing routes together?
I mean, it could be a line. You look at Devonta Smith's playing time, 2018, about 700 receiving yards. Last year in 2019, when Tua missed some time, about 1,200. So he's played a lot in the past two or three years when Tua was there. So they've had to work together. I think that does play something into it. If Tua goes to the front office, let's say Tua goes there and say, I want Smith. I want you to draft him because I know you're going to take a wide receiver. I know Jamar Chase is good, but I have this repertoire with Smith. I want him on our team. And if the Miami Dolphins are saying about even on Jamar Chase or Devonta Smith, and maybe there's just a small gap in favor of Chase, then I think you, Miami, you draft Smith. I think it does play a role there if the receiver's evaluation is close. If there's a red flag or something that pops up with Smith, then I think there's no way you would take him over Chase. But if it's close, I think that does play a role.
All right, Alabama, Ohio State, which team in this game has more top-tier draft talent?
Oh, it's easily Alabama. I mean, for Ohio State, you could say, well, maybe you got Justin Fields, who's probably going to go top 10, because that's just how quarterbacks go. Chris Olave, maybe early second-round pick, mid-second-round pick. Wyatt Davis could be a first-round pick. He's their right guard currently. And running back Trey Sermon, who I don't really know where he's. He could go into top three rounds. He could fall a little bit further. It's hard to tell. But Alabama offense, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, those guys could be top 10 picks. Mac Jones, I already mentioned, could be the top 20. Najee Harris is a first-round quality running back. I just don't know if the NFL values running backs enough to take him in the first round right now. And Alex Leatherwood at left tackle is also a guy who could end up going in the first round. Defensively, both these teams have far fewer prospects on that side of the ball that could go early on. Then on offense, Alabama has a clear head and shoulders favorite in terms of NFL potential right now.
Yeah, I'll tell you another guy you didn't bring up there, and he's not playing in this game, center Landon Dickerson, which I think is going to make a huge difference in this game, him not being there. Yeah, I would say if you had guys that could be drafted in the first two rounds, I'd say there's eight from Alabama looking at it, maybe five from Ohio State.
Which is still very good for Ohio State. I just think Alabama is probably in a different class when you're looking at what they put together so far. I didn't mention defensively, you got Patrick Surtain, who's a guy who talks about potentially as being the top cornerback in this draft class. Dylan Moses at linebacker, it's hard to tell what his value will be because he's dealing some injuries during his time at Alabama, but in the second round as well. So there's some players there defensively that add to this draft. Alabama on Ohio State side, maybe Sean Wade, but we've talked about Wade struggled this year, so I don't really know what his value is. Going into the year, I would have viewed first round pick, but at this point, he might fall to the late second, mid-third round.
All right. Trey Sermon, Najee Harris. Who's the better running back prospect?
I would take Najee Harris because Najee Harris has proven to me that he's a weapon in the passing game. I know Travis Etienne gets all of the attention for what he does in the passing game. I think Najee Harris might be a better receiver. I mean, just watch the way he catches the ball naturally. And I think that if Alabama had run more options for Najee Harris being a receiver out of the backfield, he might have had a better collection of receiving stats or receiving reps than Travis Etienne had. So I think Najee Harris is the more versatile back in Trey Sermon right now. But again, I mean, I only have a limited amount of tape on Sermon from this year and from the past couple of years. He's never been a workhorse back during a full like 11 or 12 game. I have less to say about him.
All right. How high does Patrick Surtain go?
Patrick Surtain, I've got a little bit. I'm working on a mock draft right now. I'll look at where I put him down, but I think he could go as high as the top 10 because of the teams that are up there. I mean, Dallas is at number 10 right now. Dallas needs cornerback help. Denver is at number 9. Denver could use corner help. Carolina at 8. Detroit at 7. Philadelphia at 6. All those guys could use cornerback help. So I think the idea that he would sneak out of the top 10 would be crazy unless there's something that comes up in the pre-draft process that there's either character issues or there's concern with an injury or something like that.
Well, I think the testing at the combine shouldn't make a difference, but it will also with him. If you watch his tape, Surtain has tremendous instincts, fundamentally sound as any cornerback in the country. I think you could see him go as high as number 8 to Carolina even.
Yeah, I think that's totally optional. And it would be funny, though, if Cincinnati, a team infamous for taking corners and not having them necessarily work out, if Cincinnati went and took him at five. So, no, you've got some guys taken there, like Darquez Denard. I think you have William Jackson still on the roster right now. But you've taken
those guys were in the 20s, though. I think those guys were all in the 20s.
I do view Surtain as the top corner in the draft, though. I think it's probably between him and Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, who hasn't played this year, so there may be some concerns there because he took a year off. He sat out the season. I think that means that Surtain is clearly cornerback one in this coming draft.
All right, who's your favorite under-the-radar NFL draft prospect in this game?
Oh, in this game? I think Sermon, honestly. I mean, it's hard to say that Sermon's under the radar after what he's done the past 3 weeks, but there's not as much hype around him still, despite what he's done, as opposed to some like Najee Harris or Travis Etienne. Those guys are listed as running back one and two right now in whatever order you want to put them in. But what he's done so far, I mean, there's a chance that Sermon, if you get him in the second round or third round, you could be getting a workhorse running back with the same running capabilities as someone like Najee Harris or Travis Etienne. Maybe not as good of a pass catcher as those guys per se, but not all offenses need a back that can do both those things. If you have someone like a James White there or something like that who can help you. So I think Sermon's, if you get him second or third round, provides just as much value as someone like Etienne or Najee Harris that you don't have to use a first-round pick on.
All right. I would go Haskell Garrett. I think he finds a role in the NFL. 6'2", 290 pounds. He's disruptive off the snap. My biggest sleeper here is a guy by the name of Brian Robinson Jr., who's the Alabama backup running back. I think he would start at most other schools in the country. He's probably not going to get as many he's not going to get many touches with Harris used so often, but I think he's a guy that can make a roster.
I mean, Alabama is famous for their running backs. I mean, look at where they have Damien Harris in New England this year. And that's a guy who came out and was sitting behind Sony Michel for a little while. Now he's taking over as the top running back in New England. That's not even a guy who was taken in the first round. So I think with Alabama, it's always worth taking a shot at those running backs, especially if you're talking about fourth, fifth, sixth round. Why not? Because that's a guy with high value upside because of what they've done at that position in the past and those kind of productive players. And you mentioned Haskell Garrett. This is a guy who I think could come into the NFL and be somewhat similar to a guy like what you've seen from Dexter Lawrence in New York with the Giants. He's not going to play that role, but he'll be a run stopper. And if you put him in the middle, this is a guy who could draw double teams, will eat up space and provide opportunities for guys the same way Dexter Lawrence has for Leonard Williams with the Giants.
All right. And then probably the best news for any Ohio State fan is Jim Harbaugh signed a contract extension through the 2025 season, Sam.
Yeah, 2025. I mean, they're looking forward to a long way. I think the buyout's lower, so there's an option. Like, he doesn't perform well, the buyout's much lower than for his current deal or whatever. But 2025, I mean, that's a heck of an extension. I was surprised it went that far ahead. I thought there was an option they would give him an extension, but I never thought it would go that far into the future.
All right. What's your prediction? Ohio State versus Alabama?
You know, give me Alabama. I just think they have enough talent there that they'll be able to just brute force this at some point versus Ohio State. I am looking forward to a high scoring post game. Like I said, we need a good game here in the playoffs. I'm going to say, give me 38 Alabama to 35 Ohio State.
All right. I'm going to say Alabama 41, Ohio State 27. I think Mac Jones is going to have a huge game. I don't think the Ohio State secondary is that good. The only thing that worries me here, like I said, is the interior, the Alabama offensive line being able to block the interior of the Ohio State defensive line. I think Najee Harris out of the backfield gives him an advantage over Trey Sermon. And when you look at this, we don't know how healthy Justin Fields is. So I think Fields makes a mistake or two here, which he has done against the better teams he's played, maybe not against Clemson. But against Alabama, I think he'll make a couple mistakes because I really think he has difficulties, as all Ohio State quarterbacks have over the last decade, of actually reading a defense. I think the only Ohio State chance to win this game here is Trey Sermon just has a monster game like he did against Northwestern and runs for 300 yards. But I think Mac Jones, Najee Harris, I mean, you've got the Heisman Trophy winner at wide receiver. Their other receivers aren't too bad either. I just think that this is a close game through three quarters. I think Alabama's talent, or just the massive talent they have, just wears them out in the fourth quarter. I think Alabama wins 41-27. I say this is 27-27 going to the fourth quarter, and Bama wins it. You know, you get a Mac Jones touchdown pass. You get a touchdown run by Najee Harris. But I think it'll be a really good football game. I think, and we talked about this, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, that it looked to me like Alabama was by far the best team in college football. And it doesn't look any different to me right now. And the only reason I gave Clemson a chance at any point was Trevor Lawrence. But Ohio State and Ryan Day, the key to that game was Ryan Day and the Ohio State staff completely outcoached Clemson staff.
No, I mean, you're right. You saw defensively Clemson looked confused during that game where they were not getting set up pre-snap in time. I know that Brent Venables get his calls in as late as possible in the snap, but Ohio State was messing with his head. Ohio State had him pinned down and figured out. And that's why they dominated Clemson's defense all night.
Yeah, and the scary thing is the way they talk about Brent Venables on games. It's almost like he's got dirty pictures of Kirk Herbstreit and the boys, isn't it? I mean, you hear him mentioned like 20 times. Yeah.
No, he gets a lot of props. He gets talked about almost as much as Dabo Sweeney. But frankly, I think the offensive coordinator for Clemson this year was just as good, if not better, for most of the season than what we got from Brent Venables. Although, of course, he missed that game versus Ohio State. But I think we've actually had some great OC work, and that doesn't get nearly mentioned as much as what we got from Brent Venables, usually.
Well, and the bad thing is they keep mentioning Venables the last game, and Ohio State defensive coordinator Kerry Combs was the better defensive coordinator. Kerry Combs, I mean, I'm from the Cincinnati area. He was the head coach of Coleraine High School. They were dominant, won state championships year after year. He'd been a DB coach under Urban Meyer of Ohio State. He's a great football coach. I think he even spent some time with the Tennessee Titans. Now he's the defensive coordinator with Ohio State. He's a great football coach. And I don't think it's going to matter this week because I think Alabama's talent is going to overwhelm them. But I'll take Kerry Combs over Brent Venables any day.
There you know, it is.
Because anybody they got to talk to. Yeah, but personality-wise, Kerry Combs has got a much better personality. I mean, he's a better football coach. He's been more successful at other places. I mean, Brent Venables is basically, you know, Dabo Sweeney's boy, right?
I don't know about that per se, but.
Well, why didn't he get a head coaching job somewhere?
He's turning opportunities. These guys' sons are playing at Clemson right now. Both his sons are playing at Clemson.
Sons could transfer. I'd want to transfer.
They probably wouldn't get as much playing time as they do at Clemson.
Dude, even if Dabo Sweeney was, I mean, it doesn't matter. If Dabo Sweeney's my best friend in the whole world, that makes me want to go somewhere else and beat his ass even worse. Maybe that's just me. I mean, because it's probably, really, it's just
you. You're not everyone's wired like you are, Mike.
What's that supposed to mean? Is that a shot or a compliment?
That's a compliment. It's a compliment.
Sure it is. See, you threw the sword of it, which tells me that it's not. All right, tomorrow at 1 o'clock, the NFL show where we will recap the 6 super wild card games, which yesterday gave us some interesting stuff to talk about, especially with Frank Reich, who pooped down both legs, it looked like. Of course, Tyler Henneke. I mean, it looked to me like the Redskins found a quarterback last night, too. Henneke looked pretty good.
Yeah, he should definitely be on that roster next year.
Yeah, I mean, if they would have played Alex Smith, they'd have gotten beat much worse. I think Henneke.
We'll talk about using his mobility. Heineken's mobility was a huge factor in that game as well. He ran for like 50 yards in that one touchdown. You would never get that out of Alex Smith. And Alex Smith probably would have finished the game with 150 passing yards, a touchdown, and an interception. So Heineken was what kept in that game.
Yeah, and we look at the Rams Seahawks, where that was probably one of the hardest games to watch I've ever seen in a playoff game, especially up through like partway through the third quarter. I actually stopped watching the game and went and worked out just because it was so damn boring to watch those teams try to play offense. And the Seattle offensive line is horrible. The Rams defense is great. I mean, Jared Goff is not very good. I mean, maybe he made some plays after I left, which won him the game, but I'm thinking from what I saw, the defense won the Rams that game.
Well, was that pick six and that wide receiver screen by Darius Williams really made the difference in the end game? That's really what put Seattle under.
Well, the pick six to me is number 18's fault because that guy didn't even try
blocking,
to go make that block. I mean, that's why Russell Wilson stood up through it, because he expects 18 to go out and smack that dude. And if you watch the play, if he actually runs out and smacks him, he forces him outside of DK Metcalf. Metcalf catches the ball and he runs for at least 5 yards. And with Metcalf, I mean, the other thing that was disturbing to me is the way Metcalf acts like a little girl when he doesn't get his way.
Well, yeah, you guys should start worrying about that, because we've seen receivers come into the NFL in the past who have been maybe not necessarily first-round draft picks, but come in and they get very upset. We saw it with Antonio Brown. Now, granted, Antonio Brown is a bit of an extreme case, but even like Stephon Diggs in Minnesota. Stephon Diggs in Minnesota was causing problems, which is part of the reason why he got traded away. He was causing some issues there. So I think there is some concern that, you know, DK Metcalf, he's a great player, but let's not let it go to his head here. And he did have like 98 yards and 2 touchdowns, so I don't know why he's so upset.
Yeah. Are there any hey, Greg Gorecki, you have a great day also. Are there any Cleveland Browns that will be eligible to play tonight? Or is this going to be the Steelers just playing amongst themselves?
Well, no, they're going to have Ronnie Harrison at safety, who originally thought tested positive and would be unavailable. He's actually going to be okay. It was a false positive, so he's going to be playing tonight. So they have more players than I think they were expecting. They also have backup tight end Harrison Bryant's going to be available as well.
Yeah. Well, the Cleveland Browns are still the Cleveland Browns, so
yeah,
that's what worries me. You know, in 2015, the Bengals were a lot better than the Steelers. Didn't matter. The Bengals were still the Bengals. All right, guys, we are going to wrap it up. You can follow Sam Teets at SamTeets33. Make sure you check out the Sam and Sam show also, which was on Friday night, where they incessantly talk about hockey. And I could just tell how enthused you are to talk hockey, Sam.
Yeah, could you see it just on my face? I totally understood everything that Sam McGinnis was talking about.
Yeah, it was almost like he was speaking German and you were speaking English. All right, we're going to go ahead. We're going to wrap it up. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock with the NFL show and a brand new sponsor for the NFL show. But for now, you can go to Manscaped, use promo code TGT20, 20% off your first purchase and free shipping. So for Sam Teets, I'm Mike Goodpaster. Make sure you go to Rockfin, Rockfin, Rockfin. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.